Okay, welcome to another edition of the 1st Stu Battalion Chief. And I have Eric Pettaway from Boston with me, the old man. And Tony Carroll, formerly of DC. So, welcome, guys. How's things? What's going on? All good? Tony, good?
Yeah, good day. Good stuff here. It's, like I said, kind of we're getting the springtime coming in. It's nice.
Yeah, a little windy today.
Get the boat fired up here soon.
A little windy today up here. Glad
windy.
I'm not working.
That's to say the least, you know. And Eric, so we've been talking. So anyway, tonight I was thinking about the topic being managing resources. And I don't know, we've come a long way, I would say. And Eric, we see like half of you. You know that, right? Just so you know.
Yeah, kind of.
It's like you're Superman. You're disappearing into the wall.
Yeah, I'm not in the ideal position, but I don't want to see the mess behind me.
He's casting a friendly ghost. He's going to the wall.
I should have went downstairs, but
no worries. So, anyways, you know, managing resources. I think we've come kind of full circle a little bit, where you know, when I came on a job, it was a different mindset. You know, the old mantra was don't open the line until you see fire. You know, I can remember going to fires and, you know, being out two windows and the chiefs in Harlem or in the Bronx would be using two and two. But back then, one engine stretched one line, you know, so that's two engines stretching two lines and two trucks. And, you know, when we lost the manning in New York City, then we started teaming up engines. So now we have four engines stretching two lines. And then we still have the first truck responsible for the fire floor and the second truck for the floor above. But what I'd like to talk about is, you know, like especially from the seat, from the incident commander's seat, you know, and I'm saying like the seat, but I mean being in front of the building. And I don't know if that offends anybody, but I think us in the East Coast, we like to be in front of the building. Tony, you agree? Yeah, you're muted, Tony. You got to make sure you hit unmute.
Yes.
Eric, I know you love being in the car, but, you know.
Yeah. I personally, myself, I try to stay away from being so judgmental, but I feel like when you're outside in the front, you also want to tap into your senses, you know, what you see, hear, smell. And I think it's easier if you're within proximity of the fire building.
Absolutely. Amen.
I'm sure everybody here has been, especially when we were kind of new chiefs, like we tended to bounce around a lot, thinking, because you're coming off a company where you were used to doing something
exactly
physically, and it was hard to break that mentality and realize I'm here now for command and control, not, you know, jump off the truck, balls to wall, run a line into the fire building. Yeah. But I also believe, like, I like what I see in there's times. You know, on the inside, a company might say, hey, chief, fire's knocked down. And you take a look down, say, the D side, and you're like, oh, yeah, well, it's still coming out the soffits or that rear window. And it's so easy as a firefighter to say, when you're inside the building, and say, yeah, that fire's out. But it's out in your limited viewpoint.
Yeah.
Outside, if you're watching, you're hearing, I know sometimes hearing things, but like one big thing I try to hear, especially on like a three decker with a flat roof, is I can hear when it cutting the roof.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The distinctive noise. So if I see that, and then I see signs of, you know, the lines charge and now the smoke's changing a little, I'm like, okay, give them a few more minutes and we probably got this. But more importantly, it's when I don't hear it. Hmm. That kind of like, so that's why for me personally, I would like to be in close proximity, but, you know, not like, say, inside a collapse zone or nothing like that, but somewhere near the front of the building, versus, say, being down the street and trying to discern everything by audio, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense.
I hear what you're saying. Yeah, I know that I was, as a battalion chief in D.C., they're very much about the car. But I'd like the car as close as possible, right? I mean, that's and really, you know, it's windows up, doors closed, so you can concentrate. There have been a lot of, I think there's been a lot of instances where we're missing stuff, missing radio transmissions if you're outside. But, you know, I coming here to this rural area, I really like to be able to touch guys as they come up and say, this is what I want you to do, right? And it's a whole lot easier to talk to them that way. And they, you know, affirmation, and then send them in, then it is trying to explain it on the radio. So, I can see both. I really like, you know, being able to kind of connect with them as they come up to give that assignment.
I think maybe what's a little different, where Eric and I have a bit of an advantage, is that in New York and Boston, we both have aides, and I do a lot of communicating into the – my aide is in the car. You know, I want him in the car because he's talking to the dispatcher. He's listening up on all different types of things. And the FAST team or the RIT team is sitting next to the EFAST. So, yes, if you don't have an aide, I understand that, you know, you do want to have some comms. But one thing I used to like to do, no matter what the weather or whatever, keep the windows open. I remember one night we had a really, really foggy, foggy night. It was like you couldn't see more than 20 feet in front of you, you know. And we got a phone line for a fire. And I think I was the first on the scene because we were coming from another box. And I got there and I had my window open as usual. And nothing showing because I couldn't see the top of the building. I mean, a six-story building. And I looked at my aide. I got out of the car and I said, transmit the box. I said, we got a fire. Give the 1075. And like, you couldn't see anything, but I smelt it. I knew. I just, something about it, the odor of the smoke, the way it was burning, whatever it was. And sure enough, you know, the first truck got there and engine, and they went up. And sure enough, we had a top floor. So there's a lot to be said for your senses, you know. And if you're in the car, all buttoned up, you might miss stuff, you know. But I do get the other side of it. Like Eric said, you know, there are two sides to it. And, you know, you want to be in contact with the dispatcher and hearing the comms, and you might miss it. Or you said that, Tony, where you're outside, you're missing some comms. But I think the beauty about Boston and New York is that we have a built-in redundancy. You know, like I have me as the all-hands chief. I have a deputy chief. I have a all-hands chief. You know, we have plenty of people listening up. Because I've missed things numerous times where my aide will turn around and say, hey, chief, did you get that? I'm like, no, I missed it. What did he say? I'll get on the radio, Battalion 3, 10-5. Oh, yeah, chief, fire's knocked down, whatever, you know. So, yeah, you do miss stuff, invariably. But I think the idea of being in front of the building, it gives that command presence. It gives you that, you know, the firefighters see you. You know, they know you're in command. And there's some kind of assurance there. Psychologically, you know, like they know who to report to. You know what I mean, Tony? What do you think about that? Like that command presence, you know?
No, I do. Like I said, I like to have that kind of connection to them in the front of the building. But I think you can establish the command presence in the car too. You know, and you know, be the in command. But yeah, I get it. And I had a couple of chiefs who like to do that, like to get in front. And me personally, the way I was raised, again, was in the car. But we had a couple of chiefs that would like to get out and manage that. That was pretty rare in the D.C. fire department.
Eric, I'm sure you could agree. Like, I mean, you have your aide in the car, right? Your aide stays in the car, I'm sure.
No.
No, he doesn't. Oh, no, your aide. So your aide works almost like a recon guy.
Yeah, so one of the first assignments, and obviously type of building and access is to go to the rear and give me a heads up.
Right, right.
From there, usually let's say it's a three decker, I would say, hey, make sure the stairs are kept clear. Hmm. And sometimes, like, since we're down to 1 and 3, you know, a lot of times our officers are really like working foremen. So not only do I have trouble sometimes hearing communications, they'll also have trouble in I'm finding I was a big proponent of everybody have a radio. But you really got to preach radio discipline.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you will get such minor information in those initial stages of a fire. Speaking of the last one, when someone walked up, they said, oh, hey, there's solar panels. Okay. I could see the junction box and I already saw the meters. So I knew it was 3 townhouses in the one structure, right? But now let's say it was a high rise. And here in Boston, if it's a high rise, usually the initial chief's aide will eventually become the elevator operator.
Wow. Okay.
And that's after like the deputy came and a few other chiefs. And then we also get an evacuation chief, and him and his aide are supposed to work together. And they eventually will do elevator control and safe areas or routes of access. A taxpayer said, I might say, tell me about the rear, or do we even have a shot of getting in the rear? The last taxpayer I had was so bricked up in bars, I almost gave up even coming in at the rear. Basically like, hey, let's put some water on it and get the roof, and hopefully we don't have to take out those windows, or we would have needed half a dozen more ladder companies just to open up the windows and the rear entrances. So I think a lot of it is also building, because then you have, like, say, the part of the city that's like a bucolic suburb. And maybe if I was a chief out there, I would probably use the aide a lot different as well. I might say, hey, stick with me. Some chiefs do that. Their aide's like right next to them. But I think the big thing is, because we all get on the same fire ground. Like, I know for the longest time, I had no idea it was the aide talking to dispatch in New York and not the chief.
Yes, it's the aide. Yeah,
I didn't know that for years until someone told me. And I was like, oh.
Right.
Whereas we're all on the same channel, supposedly. And
right.
And then it all depends on, like, do I have my regular aide? Was he not working? And sometimes I forget that maybe it's a guy not used to working with me, and I assume things and I probably shouldn't.
Yeah.
So I think it's building specific incident.
But I also think, Eric, the difference is with me here in New York is that we have a tactical channel, tactical one, tactical two, command one, whatever. And we have a whole separate radio in the car that talks right with the dispatcher. And I need someone to monitor that radio.
Yeah.
Because the dispatcher sometimes has loads of information for me. Like, hey, you know, my aide will be, hey, chief, you know, we're getting reports of people trapped on the 5th floor. You know, it comes through the dispatch. I need someone there in that car monitoring that radio.
Yeah, that's what when I was an aide back in, you know, 2000, and that was back when we were out of the car. We would get out, and the aide was kind of like what Eric's talking about. We would be the eyes for that chief. And I remember, again, you might be the first guy in the back to get a view of the rear, and then you might be inside, kind of giving the reports for that attack crew, instead of the officer having to worry about it, right? The aide would relay some of those messages out to the battalion. And then I'm not sure exactly when it switched. It probably it switched and the aide stayed in the car with the battalion. And the aide, like you say, the aide manages, keeps track of resources, and then he communicates with dispatch on the main channel while the chief runs the fireground channel, right? So he's pretty much stuck. Now, the second chief, his aide will go with him, and they might be a, you know, a forward command or be a, you know, the rear or something like that.
That's what we do. Yeah. Our second chief in, which is me most of the time, I come in with my aide. And sometimes, like, I'll break that up a little bit. Like, I'll be on a fire floor, and depending on his experience level, I'll say, hey, listen, hey, Rick, go to the floor above and just, you know, because I have a truck company up there anyway, you know. So our truck companies, break again, have enough firefighters. We have a firefighter on a roof and an outside vent firefighter to do those jobs. So they're almost like recon. So we, again, another layer down. But if you don't have those resources, that job still has to get done, you know, depending on what your resources are. You know, so we're flush with resources. We're very fortunate, you know.
Yeah.
But even sometimes we get overwhelmed. We get a six-story multiple dwelling, H-type, and, you know, building's 100 by 100. You know, I mean, it's massive. You know, so, you know, depends on how to, again, how to use the resources, you know. So speaking of like managing resources now, so we, you know, we spoke about the chiefs, the incident commander, but, you know, New York City is unique in a sense where we have a signal 1075, right? 1075, 1076, 1077, you know, they're all considered working fires, like, you know, for initial, first alarm. And at 1075, you could have a two-story private dwelling with a bedroom fire on the second floor, or you could have an H-type building, 100 by 100, fire on the top floor with two rooms going, and it's still, they're both 1075. You're both going to have four engines, two trucks, a RIT, another chief, a deputy, rescue, and a squad. We give a 1077, that's for a high rise and a multiple dwelling. And we have a 1076, which is a kind of like a second alarm almost for a commercial occupancy high rise. So my question is, how do you manage your resources? Like, you could have a fire on a second floor and have four engines, two trucks, and you have so many firefighters, you don't know what to do with them. And then you have a fire on the top floor of an H-type, and you don't have enough firefighters even to get that first line in place, you know? So as an incident commander, what's the process? Eric, I'll start with you. Like, what is the process when you look at a triple-decker and you got a fire on the second floor and whatever your resources are, what is going through your mind? Does it matter how much fire there is, or do you go by the size of the building, people trapped? I mean, I know there's a lot of variables, but... Well, I'm less inclined to give multiple alarms only, and I have a whole host of reasons for that. But, you know, I think it's kind of easy just to give a second alarm, and it's, you know, like, okay, I'm covered. But then, you know, now you have way too many firefighters for maybe, you know, a one-room fire on a second floor of a triple decker. So what's your thought process, Eric?
Well, for me, what I usually do is, I said it before, at least I personally try to see three sides of the building. I'm lucky before I get out of the car. One thing I've, when it's wood frame, I try not to get too, by the amount of fire. Because, you know, wood looks good, but when you get water, it goes out pretty fast. So in let's say 2:30 in the morning occupied to me is different than say 2:30 in the afternoon and somebody's home that says no one else is there. Like, you know, you don't take 100% till you confirm. But I'm a firm believer is unless it's jumping buildings, let them get water first. Because what has happened at times and it's happened to me is, you know, I once got a report that it was going up the rear stairs and jumping to a building. All right, we're going to need help, second alarm. And before they finished tapping out the second alarm, I could see that fire was out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, whatever. But for me personally, I was kind of like, because I was a newer chief, I was sort of like, I didn't know these people because I was just covering. I wasn't in a assigned district. Mm-hmm. And like, and I've used this before, I believe, but if you know your personnel.
Right. Like, yeah.
I have some officers that wouldn't tell you if they were on fire.
Right. Yes.
And then I've had others tell me there's heavy fire in the basement and it's a lazy boy chair.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I kind of try to moderate that. But one of the big factor for me is, and especially now, and I'm sure it's in New York and every other city, it's in the suburbs now, is everybody's converting basements. Here in Mass, we have a law that 6 or more units requires a central station alarm. Mm-hmm. What is it? It's like not within the second degree of kindred, and sprinklers. So the big thing now is they'll cut it up to 5 on one floor. And for some reason, that gets them below the standard. And I'm noticing more and more we're getting them in the basements. So I believe time of day, and if I'm familiar with the street, if I remember to bring my glasses, what's the information on the CAD system? But I try not to rely on that too much because, you know, we've all probably got cheaters in the car. And then the day you need them, somebody used them and forgot. You know, but anyways, so what I'm trying to say, I try to give the members 5 minutes unless it's jumping buildings.
Or get the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say the same thing. Give the guys a chance.
Yes, because again, and here's one of my fears is that if you kind of stick to, every time you see a fire, that's automatic second alarm. The amount of resources now coming there or covering what you guys call acting.
Yeah, relocating, yeah.
Yeah, the amount of apparatus you now have on the road, to me, is too much sometimes. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to tread carefully. I just believe, the only people that care about multiple alarms are firefighters and city admins that don't like you. Because a second alarm is different in every single department. So, and I use an example is when I came on, you got 3 engines, 2 trucks, a rescue, and a chief. Now, if I get a confirmed fire, I got 4 engines, 3 trucks, a tower, a rescue, and 2 other chiefs. Now, granted, 1 engine truck and the chief supposed to stand by his RIT companies, but that's a lot of resources that for me, I just like, where do I put them in a 3-story wood frame building?
Exactly.
You know, everybody wants to work.
Yeah. And the flip side of that is from a firefighter's perspective, and Tony, I'm sure you could identify with this, is that, you know, we all want to go to fires, right? We're sitting in a house watch and they strike the box and it's like an all hands and sounding good. And, you know, you're like, oh man, you know, hopefully second alarm, you know, if we go, and you start thinking about what you're going to do, but no one wants to go to a box and stand there fast. I used to call it stand fast. You get the hand. You're like, okay. Stand there for a half hour, and then you're taking a pose, and then, you know, you're not doing anything. I mean, like you said, it's multi-dimensional. Yeah.
In fact, you say that, right? So,
I mean, but I'm not there to make them happy, right? Right? I'm sorry you don't get to work.
Yeah, I know, but still, but I don't need 4 engines in the street for
I think we've all been there, and I once had an officer that would cheat, which I liked. Like, if they struck a box and was receiving calls, he was already leaving, even if oh, come on, we're going to drive a train in.
Right.
Three in the morning or something, right? When I was young, I loved it, obviously. You know what I mean? Yeah. But at the same time, I believe you should have different levels. Does that make sense? Like, like, where are you? Where you're at? What type of structure? And I can't, like, unless it's a special response, we get the same, whether it's a cape in one side of the city to six-story brick.
Yeah, I'll give you a perfect example. Here's a great example, right? I had a fire one time, and it was, it came in as an oil burner. It was a six-story multiple dwelling H-type. And what had happened was, in New York City, in new law tenements, the first floor between the basement and the first floor is fireproof, right? But what they done when they renovated the building is they created like a mini void space, right? And this fire was rolling around. And what happened was the smoke was so bad, right? I mean, it was like every floor was like, you could tell by the guys, you know, they're calling you, you know, and you could hear them breathe. Like the whole building was saturated with smoke. And the deputy, you know, it was a friend of mine, he wanted to transmit a second alarm. And I said to him, I said, listen, we need truck companies. I don't need eight engines here because we have one fire. It's on the first. We know exactly where it's at, but we just really can't get to it. It's not going anywhere. It's just smoke. But we need to search. We had like 50 apartments to search. You know, so if I had transmitted the second alarm, we would have had eight engines there. And unless I put them to work as a search and rescue, I wouldn't use them. But what I needed was truck companies. And we wound up special calling, I think, seven truck companies. You know, and that's just the way it went. So, Tony, I know we're not there to make them happy, but at the same time, you know, I've done this where, like, you know, guys are complaining, but then you're stripping a whole neighborhood. And there was a fire. I did it one time where I didn't do that. And then there was a better, like a more important fire, like 10 blocks away, where all those companies would have been there. So I think you just kind of have to weigh this stuff out.
Oh, no, I'm talking about even on the first alarm, right? Because when I was there, the SOGs, the guidelines had every unit on the first alarm doing something, right? So if the chief doesn't say anything, I'm going to end up with five hand lines. I'm going to end up with a roof open. I'm going to end up with, you know, with the ladders on all four sides. Again, not bad stuff, right? But regardless, if it's a one line fire, if it was a pot of food, if you don't say anything, that's what you're going to get. So I'm saying is that, you know, manage your resources, even on the first alarm, right? So manage those and also give that first company a room to work, right? Because, you know, if everybody's in there, they don't have any room to work. Give them some room to work so they can find out what's going on. And it might be a one-line fire. They're mostly one-line fires. Once all the dust settles, it's a one-line fire. I'm sorry you didn't get to stretch the third line in here, right? So just hang tight, fellas. Give these guys some room. Again, it wasn't your night. Tomorrow night will be your night, but that's the way the cookie crumbles. Now, second alarm and things like that. Yeah, I think that, you know, I think you should be able to call what you need, right? We were big on, you had to call a second alarm. You couldn't call, we had a task force for a while, right? Which was like two engines and a truck. And you didn't need a whole box, a whole second alarm, but they got rid of a task force because there was too many task force calls being called because they didn't want to go to a second alarm. If you want more units, you had to call a second alarm. That was too much, right? Now they're a little relaxed and you can call what you need. You know, again, you only need a couple trucks or you just need people, right? Call what you need.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're in the same boat. You know, you give a second alarm, you're getting four more engines, you're getting two more trucks, you're getting satellites, you're getting safety chief, you're getting a whole field comm, you're getting a whole boatload of people.
You're probably going to get the guys from downtown too.
Well, they're in the daytime.
You know, I think like with Boston, D.C., and New York, I mean, we're constrained in a way. Like, you're right. It's not like a Chinese menu where you could order a little bit of this and a little bit of that and tailor make things. You know, it's either you like in New York, you could order as many trucks as you want, but if you order one extra engine above, you know, the extra engine, you now you're asking for two. You got to give a second alarm. And yeah, I just, I guess what I'm thinking is that that doesn't solve the problem, though. I like what you said, Eric. You're like, you know the firefighters, know who you got, and give them some time. And like you said, don't give them time to breathe and let them work, let them get the job done. You know, you don't have to. You know, have faith in these guys. You know, let the firefighters do what they do. Have trust in them that they're doing their job. And, you know, you just have to – like someone made a great analogy one time about being calm. He said, it's like looking at a duck on a pond. He said the feet are moving a million miles an hour, but, like, meanwhile inside they're, like, panicking. You know, and I think you just have to – I think the best word to say is just trust, you know.
Yeah, and for me, that kind of goes back to knowing your personnel and their strengths and weaknesses. You know, it's getting out there, knowing your district. And we do this thing back to basics, which is, you know, pretty good when the weather permits down at their fire academy where they set up scenarios so that at least – they want to get to the point where, like, the first alarm should generally know what they're supposed to do. And, I mean, you should before you even get there. Like, you know, hey, we're going to, you know, for us, if we got rear porches, that first line goes to the rear porch. Because that line's goal is to make sure it stays to one porch. You know, like a day like today, I've had some fires and pulled up, and it's gone from one to four three-deckers in 5 minutes. But we're also, if nothing else is going on, that's based on knowing I'm going to have three good engines all pulling up at the same time. So one morning I just walked in the door and there was like two other fires, and then I get a box. And other than the companies in my house, I had no clue who was coming. And it turned out pretty much everybody else didn't know who was coming. And it was a fire, two floors occupied, six family. That was not a good feeling once I realized, hey, I don't, like, two of these engines I don't work with, so I have no idea how they are. In fact, they're not even close. So I just think, like, I was taught give the members time, 5 to 10 minutes. I try to stick to that. Seems to work most of the time. But I also, if I believe I need help, I don't hesitate. Like, I don't, yes. I don't use the RIT. Some people right. say, hey, send me another RIT engine. I use the RIT engine. See, I don't do that.
You can't.
If I need another engine, then I'll hit a second. But
you know. But to your point, Eric, what I'll say, and I agree with you, like in Brooklyn we have lots of row frames. You might have 10. They all have the common cock loft. You know, and you got a fire in the top floor. Yeah, I would, if fire's in the top floor, get into the cock loft, transmit the second alarm. You know, get those companies ahead of it. H-type building, fire in the top floor, you get a report, any kind of fire in a cock loft, second alarm. Taxpayer, second alarm. But I don't think that we can't get sucked into, because fire is out two windows, that like this is a, like to me, I think that's a good thing, quite honestly. I think that, what do you call it? Eric's got an old dog. He's got to take care of something. But what I think is, you have to, I don't know. I think it's a good thing. You know, you see fire at the windows, you know where the fire is. They stretch a line, they knock it down, they push out the windows. When you pull up and you have smoke coming out of, pushing out of like four windows and you don't know where the fire is, that's a, for me, a more scary feeling. Now, I know, Tony, you're working now with more of a rural area and a private dwellings, and that's kind of opposite of what we're talking about here. Like, you have to be proactive, because if you're not ahead of it, you might wait. God, it's like here where I live. You give me 15 minutes before you get another engine.
Yeah, I definitely I don't have any resources to manage.
Right.
And I definitely don't know. It's not consistent on what's coming on each incident, right? We're trying to dial that in, and especially if we can get some mutual aid partners to kind of mm-hmm. buy in, you know, so I can guarantee that I'm going to get four yep. engines and, you know, a couple tankers and maybe a ladder truck or something. But really, I mean, I've got the second engine may be doing, you know, search, right? Which is a truck work, but it's going to get done. And, you know, we're going to manage our resources. It's been nice a couple of times you look back and there's, you know, three or four or five people that are not doing anything. So you got a pool of people that can be ready to send them in, rotate people around. But it's yeah. it's tough. Again, there's not a whole lot of resources. Yeah,
I think now let's talk about that's what I was talking about earlier is urban firefighting, where you're like in a very dense city with a lot of companies. But now we're talking about rural firefighting where I live, and that's a whole different animal, you know. And I like, you know, like this is where I think the chief really has to like that's where he proves his worth, because you have to use your resources as needed. Like you might, like you said, you might have an engine doing ventilation or search. You know, you might as needed, you know, it's like in New York and Boston, you know, it's kind of like, it's like almost like a play or a script. It's like being like, even in DC, you know, this, you know, first engine, second engine, but once you don't have those SOGs and you have just companies, now you have to really put on that thinking that, but at the same time, I think there's so many variables too, because you probably have lightweight construction, you have voids up the yin yang, so there's so many different variables. But I think what has to happen is that we just have to just think the whole thing through. Eric, so we're talking about rural firefighting. No more urban firefighting, but rural firefighting. And I think it's a different animal and we're not used to it. You and I have no experience with that.
I'm curious, Tony, is the culture shock from going from a city to where you're at now. What was that like? I'm curious.
Yeah, I would say that the toughest part is knowing that it's going to be 15. Right. Well, actually, I would say that the firehouses that are within 15 minutes of wherever you are are already coming to your fire, right? So if you need any help, it's over. It's going to be 20, 25 minutes, right? So that was the beauty. And I was so, again, you get so spoiled there, where you're calling seven trucks on that fire and they were all there yeah. within 8 Quick. Minutes, right? And, you know, I was at a fire. It was a big fire, my first one out here. And, you know, guys are calling like to take a break. I can't take a break because, you know, and then even like managing the water, I have to manage water, right? Water was abundant. We could go around the corner and get another, I could tap into more water. You know, so that's the culture shock. And I think, you know, that, but the beauty of it is the water does the same thing here that it does there, right? And if you know how to use it, you can be very effective. And fortunately, you know, we don't find, there haven't been a whole lot of people trapped in these places. Because again, there's not a lot of help coming to do it. And but I will say that I think that we've been able to keep stuff to, you know, to a couple rooms. You know, we're doing a good job of getting their proactive decisions, right? Front loading their decision making, that when they get there, this is what I want to do, right? And we've talked about the exterior water stuff and how valuable that is. And it makes an impact when they think that they can have an impact, right?
Yeah. I know the feeling, because believe it or not, even in New York City, and I'm sure in Boston, you might even have the same thing. I had pockets, like especially like 96 engine is a very, very busy engine. They do 6,500 runs. 64 engine does 5,600 runs. And they're very spread apart, like down in Soundview, like in the back of my response area. And we have this whole big development now that's lightweight construction, brand new. And it turned out one night we had a phone alarm for a fire. And boy, oh boy, man, it seemed like it took forever to get companies there. It turned out to be minor, but still, you know, I know that I got that feeling though. I was like, wow, like they're not here. Like, why aren't they here, man? You know, like I'm used to, like, you know, when I was working down in 17 truck, I mean, companies were on top of each other. You know, I mean, we had four engines and two trucks in the rescue and a squad there within 5 minutes. I mean, they were all there. Now it's like, you know, one of the companies was out and now the other engine was on EMS run. And now it's like, there was no one coming. And I'm like, what the heck, man? I get it, you know, but I think, the point of it, and maybe we'll see how we're doing on time, but we could wrap up with this point. What I'm just trying to say is that don't be swayed by just because the fire's out the windows. Like, I don't think we have to panic. I mean, like you said, Eric, Tony, you both said it. Trust in your guys. Trust in the firefighters. Give them time to work. Let them sort it out before we go jump in the gun. When we have the enough resources. Like, I can't talk about rural firefighting. That's a whole different animal. I would say the opposite's true. But when you have the resources coming, think about what you need them for. You know, I know already that I have four engines. You know, if I have to stretch a third line, yeah, I'm going to need possibly a second alarm, because I know I need two more engines to stretch that third line, you know. But if you have multiple.
No, I definitely loved being in a city where you would get, and it's typically like a new guy would say, hey, I got smoke showing from a block away. Well, no shit. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to have smoke showing. That's why they called us, right? So, you know, and typically, right, what would happen? A lot of times you got smoke showing from a block away. It's a car in the alley. Right, well, so don't get excited.
We get oil all the time in the winter. Smokestacks, black.
Heavy that's why we're coming, right? So don't get excited. But you're right. Out here, if I got to call them, I need to load it up. I need to call and say, hey, can you get me a tanker for mutual aid? Can you?
It's apples and oranges. We're not talking about, like, it's urban firefighting and rural firefighting. It's totally two different animals. And, you know, we can't say, well, Sheridan said this, and no. I'm talking about urban firefighting where you have sufficient resources. That's when we have to start thinking about, okay, we have enough resources here. I got four engines, two trucks. We have enough to get this done. You know what I mean? Not in the middle of like Mayapack, New York, where the first engine shows up here and it's like three guys on the rig, you know? And the next guy's coming from about 5 miles, 6 miles away, and then the next one's in the next town over. That's a whole different animal.
Well, I tell you, so I think I said it before, when I first got promoted, I was Shanghai the headquarters for a couple of years. So when I got out, the only spot available at the time was probably the most suburban-like area of the city. Uh-huh. And I remember getting a brush fire. Like, somebody out west would chuckle at what we call a brush fire, and I had no aid. But I will never forget, first of all, I didn't really know that part of the city. they're calling me on the radio and I refuse to answer because I'm like, hey, I'm driving. I can't do both, talk and drive, right? I got there and I'm not going to lie. I really had no clue what I was doing.
I thought you had an aide. Told me you had an aide.
At this time, when I first, this was due to whatever reason, there was a brief period where some districts didn't have aides.
Okay.
I'll say that. And of course, now I don't have an aide. I'm going to a brush fire that I've never been to before. And, you know, I'm still the young chief.
Right.
And all I could think about the whole time was what Leo Stapleton told me is shut your mouth and act like you've been there.
Right.
Because, like, literally I had to depend on these guys and I'm trying to stand there and look, you know, cool, calm, nonchalant. But right. Boy, was I panicking. And all I kept thinking was, should I be asking for more help? Or like,
right?
I don't know. And I keep asking these guys and I'm sure they're looking at me like, oh, this is the hot shot. And it looks like he doesn't know what he's doing. But I was totally lost. And that's more of a suburban setting. I can't imagine if I was somewhere rural. I don't think I could handle it or would want to, actually.
I think it's the beauty of it. The beauty of it is it's the same thing, right? So I, again, early on, went to a big brush fire, right? But it was acres, and we didn't seem like we had enough resources. But the guys are, we'll get the tractor here and we'll get this knocked out. I'm like, oh well, they know what they're doing. So you know, just like everything else, they know what they're doing. So trust them and listen to them, right? And then support them.
I think it's more of a challenge for the rural chiefs than sometimes the urban chiefs, because you got to make a lot more decisions. I mean, for us, you know, my first engines pull up, they know where they're going. They're getting that first line off the rig. The first truck's going to the fire floor, second floor, floor above. You know, I got to decide, what do I want to do? Do I want the second line backing up the first line, or do I need to have extension? But, you know, I'm not really... Oh man, how am I going to do a search? How am I going to get I got the help. They're there, you know, and you have to, now you're working with 10 guys. You're like, holy cow. I got, you know, I got balloon frame. I got lightweight. I got, you know, I got a ladder. I got water.
Yeah. The tough part is the 10 guys come on 10 different units. Right. So now, it's like, all right, who's going to do the work?
Yeah, I get it.
So you got to, you know, figure out, all right, you ditch that rig over there, go join with that guy. I would say that it's definitely a lot more risk, right? Again, you guys got 40 guys coming. The risk's relatively low. I get it, right? And they're dangerous buildings, they're crazy setups, but you got 40 people.
Yeah,
you can pin your ears back, right? You can go in, you can be a little daredevil.
I think I was a rural chief, what I would do, and I did this in Ecuador, and I because they're all volunteers down there, is that I would try to put people as they come in into groups, like task force, whatever you want to call it, a group or a task force, whatever it is. And you get three or four firefighters. Okay, you're my first line. The next group comes in, you're my search team. The next, you know, ladder, you know, water, like the water supply. I would give that to one on its own. Like, you just manage that water resource. I did that in Katrina. Like, we had a whole water resource task force. And I would break it up. I mean, I have no experience in this whatsoever. So I have no idea really if I know what I'm talking about. But I don't know, Eric, I'm thinking like logically, like, what do we do with the first truck? What do we do with the second truck? And I would try to replicate that with firefighters as they're coming in. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Yeah, I would imagine... And again, this is just me speculating that, let's say a truck showed up first. You certainly don't want them to start just breaking windows here and there. I mean, you want them to do a search, but I'm sure you got to be cognizant that, hey, I don't even have an engine here yet. And here, not that we never have problems, but since I've been on the water system here now, like, there's some streets, there'd be a side street that'll have three hydrants on the street. So you get spoiled not realizing that it's something you don't even have to think about.
Yeah.
And then you have like three pump operators who will all work together.
Right.
So I find that's something I don't have no clue on really. Yeah. In the times we had a problem with a hydrant, you run it to the other hydrant, or you have somebody dump a feeder in or feed the first engine.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine like a rural setting where you're getting tankers or limited supply. It's like I've never drafted.
Yeah, you got to start doing math. You got to say, okay, well, an inch and 3/4 puts out 180 a minute. You know, I got 10,000 gallons, whatever. You got to start doing math, right? Tony, is that right?
Yes and no. Again, I mean, I would say that if you think about how much your hand line can put out, right, an 1.75 attack line, you know, if I'd like to do the NFA fire flow, right, length times width divided by 3. Well, that length times width divided by 3 gives you your needed flow. Well, if I take that flow and I multiply it by 3, I think that's how much square footage we can put out. So if I got one line and I got 500 square feet, I'm good. Right? 500 is a bit much, but if I got 200 square feet of fire, which is a what, 10 by 20, it's a side of a house, we're really good. And I want those guys to think that way, right? And get there as soon as you can, get some water on the fire as soon as you can. There's going to be more people coming. Yes, they're going to be a little bit of waves, but if you can make a dent in this thing, if the fire is in such a load, if there's enough fire there that your 1.75 is going to be able to do something, well, then do it, right? And don't worry about flowing a lot of water. I mean, I'm not saying to conserve your water. I'm saying go pour it all on there, right? Because that's what's going to put this thing out. Now, if you get there and the half the house is going, and probably, you know, 500 square feet, well, you're going to need help. You're going to need some help. But it's coming. So, you know, and that's where 1,000 gallon tanks, right? Most of what now we're trying to spec rigs with 1,000 gallon tank. That's a lot of firefighting capabilities, you know, and then we got 3,000 gallon tankers. If I could get 1,000 gallon Quint, that would be a home run, right? Single axle, 1,000 gallon. They're not going to make that. It's crazy. They're not going to make that kind of thing. But if I could have one of those, right, and then like a low profile so it could fit down the driveways, right. Buy those.
Yeah. As you're speaking, I'm trying to do the math in my head, like, you know, because Eric and I never think about this stuff because there's so many hydrants. I never have to worry about water, like, you know.
Well, I mean, you were in Ecuador telling them the four S's, mm-hmm. right? The four S's. Well, that's outside stuff. So I can do that. I can have that done with two guys on a rig. So start that. Maybe by the time the second rig gets here, it's not Ideal H anymore, or it's down now that, you know, that you and the other guy that's coming on that second rig, you two can advance inside. I mean, it's that thing where how do you eat an elephant, right? One bite at a time. Well, how are you going to put this fire out? One bite at a time. The beauty of it is that you brought the thing that can really do a lot of damage. Whether you have 500 or 1,000, it can still do a lot of damage. If it's too far gone, then, you know, then we're going to set up for drop tanks and rural water supply. But if we can make an impact with that first attack line, get in there and do it.
I guess to bring this back, to circle back to what we started with. So I guess what I wanted to talk about tonight was just really urban firefighting and managing resources, because you can't compare rural with urban. I'm just saying, I know they're both firefighting, because it's like wildland too. Wildland, you cannot compare wildland to structural firefighting. It's just like one's like a marathon and one's like a 100-yard dash. And I think rural firefighting, it's just so, Eric and I would be so, I don't know, I feel I would be out of my element. I don't know about you, Eric, but it would take a long time for me to get my mind around how it operates. But I guess, and to wrap it up, because we're kind of running out of time, I guess what I wanted to just start a little conversations about, just thinking about what we have on scene and what we need. So let's just put the rural we'll save that for another time, because I can't even talk about Rural, and I don't think Eric can either. You would have to be the guy, Tony. But tonight,
well, we can schedule maybe that next time.
We'll talk a bit, and you can educate us, because I only know from what up here. I mean, I think last year we might have 3 fires in the whole town. You know, I mean, thank God, right? Knock on wood. But yeah, just to wrap it up, Tony, just the closing thoughts on the urban firefighting, because you've done both, you know.
No, I think, yes, managing resources is a couple different things that come to mind when I think about that. And it's the discipline of the crews that are going to allow that first company or first two companies, engine and truck, give them room to operate, to get in inside, right, and see what they can impact. Then as the alarm gets bigger, right, I really liked, and I had a chief there who would come up to the command post and he'd ask, you know, how many resources do you are not committed? And that would be the deciding factor on when, all right, we need to get another alarm here then. Right. If you've got 8 units and 7 of them are committed, well, then it's time to call for some help.
Reflex time. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's, you know, so it's, and it wasn't about what we saw, what was showing, right? It was about where everybody's working, and they're already working and they're committed and they're not, you know, the reports are, you know, we still have fire, or we're getting a knock, we got water on the fire, but it's not out yet. Then maybe you need to get some more resources here to be ready for it to escalate.
Yeah, I think I'm going to circle back. What I was really getting at is that, and I like exactly what Eric said and what you just said, is that don't panic, like, don't push the panic button right away. Give the guy, like you said, Eric, you just recap what you said, because I like what you both said about that.
Yeah,
give
for the guy, me, it's –
Yeah.
You got to know your personnel,
know your right.
Strengths, even their weaknesses, and also 90% of the time, I'm like, I try to give them 5 to 10 minutes with water and see if we're making progress. And if it looked good, I stretch a backup line, even if it's not needed. The third line is the one that, if I have to use that, now I'm like, okay, let's see what's going on. But like I said, like where I'm at now, it's mostly wood frame. When you got a couple charged hand lines, and usually it goes out pretty fast. I'm still waiting for the shoe to drop, because we used to get a lot more taxpayers, and they seem to have, like, I mean, not that I'm asking for them, but I used to go to a lot more taxpayer fires that seem to have diminished. And I'm no longer where there's brownstones and stuff like that. So I just like to see charge lines. Like, I don't try to stand out by myself. If it's just me outside, then I'm dicking around, which I don't want to do. But, you know, if two lines are stretched and operating and it already looks better, everybody relax, stand down. The sparks can turn the radio off. You know what I mean?
Right. That's great. So I think, just to wrap it up, I like what you said, Tony. Give the guys, give them some room to breathe. I love that. I do the same thing. And Eric, what you're saying is just, you know, trust in your crews. You know, you know you guys, know you guys who's working. And I think what I would say is just don't be so quick to hit that trigger, that button. You know what I mean? Give the, like you both said, just exactly what you both said. Just, you know, even if the fire is out 2 windows, that's probably a good thing. Because once they get the line up there, they'll probably knock it out pretty quickly. And don't be swayed that doesn't mean, if you have lightweight construction or a row frame where you have a common cock loaf, that's a whole different animal. But your regular bread and butter, private dwelling, one stove, fire in a bedroom, you know, give the guys room to breathe. So,
yeah, well, 2 windows is probably the same room, yeah, right? So the water is going to make quick work of that room.
You guys really nailed it tonight. So, well, I want to thank you again for being here. It was always a pleasure. And Until we meet again, be safe out there.